sea,
on top within the forest. Vatsan
the cows.
Palamcha.
Palamcha.
And their caretakers, the cowherd boys. Vishwavit. Krishna, who is aware of everything going on. Throughout the whole cosmic manifestation. Sarva. Everything. Vidikrita. Was executed by Brahma. Krishna. Lord Krishna. Sahasa. Immediately. Avajagamaha. Could understand. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna was unable to find the calves and their caretakers, the cowherd boys, anywhere in the forest, he could suddenly understand that this was the work of Lord Brahma. Purport. Although Krishna is Vishwavit, the knower of everything happening in the entire cosmic manifestation, as an innocent child, he showed ignorance of Brahma's actions. Although he could immediately understand that these were the doings of Brahma. This pastime is called Brahma Vimohana, the bewilderment of Brahma. Brahma was already bewildered by Krishna's activities as an innocent child, and now he would be further bewildered. So, in one sense, everyone is trying to bewilder everybody else. The big corporations are trying to bewilder us into buying their products that we don't really need. And we go to school and they bewilder us into believing that our country is the greatest and we should all be cooperative, productive citizens of our nation. This is all Maya or bewilderment being created by those who are trying to manipulate others. And we're doing it also. We do it with our friends, we do it with our children, with our spouses. We're all trying to bewilder one another. It's like a contest among sorcerers. Who's the most powerful magician? Who can bewilder whom? That's how the material world is. Of course, sometimes the competition is settled by brute force, but a lot of times it's just by bewilderment, by the tricks of the mind. Just like a monkey doesn't have much power to fight against a human being or practically any other animal. He's got some, he can scratch, he can bite, but he really can't defeat an enemy. So he shows his teeth, he makes a big show, tries to scare by showing an ugly face. That's an attempt to bewilder, to manipulate by making a show. So this is universal in the material world, and we see it all the time. It's going on all the time. Some people, their whole lives are just a life of creating bewilderment. Some people are big creators of bewilderment, manipulators of others by putting on a big show. And some are more in the mode of being manipulated. But practically it's all, as Prabhupada says, a civilization of cheaters and cheated. This also goes on in the spiritual world because there's enjoyment in it. In bewildering and in being bewildered. So Brahma is coming and he's the biggest bewilderer. He's the controller of the whole universe. And he's the one who created all these material illusory situations in which someone thinks that he's a big king or a big businessman. Who made up all this illusion? It was Brahma. Who controls it? Brahma. The demigods maintain the illusion. They're all subordinate to Brahma. The sages are the ones who understand the illusion and are the theoreticians behind all of it. Brahma is the first of the sages. Whatever Vedic knowledge anybody has, they learned it from Brahma and his disciples. So Brahma is the most expert in this art of bewilderment. He's the lord of the universe of bewilderment. Now he's coming to play at a test of wits to see who can bewilder whom. But Prabhupada points out he's already defeated. Before he even starts, he's already bewildered by Krishna. Krishna has made the first move, it's like the chess players move the pawn out to the middle to defend the most important part of the chessboard. The first good move, first few good moves, you can practically win the game. So Krishna has already made the first move. He's already bewildered just by Brahma witnessing, first of all, the killing of Agasura, a great feat worthy of God, to defeat this huge serpent who devoured the friends of Krishna. For Krishna to kill him, that's a great feat. Little boys don't do things like that. That impressed Brahma. But right after that, or same morning, Krishna is eating lunch with the boys, like a little boy. Now Brahma is confused. Brahma was already bewildered by Krishna's activities as an innocent child. It's one thing that God acts like God, kills demons, rules universes, creates and destroys. You can understand God doing those things. But when God puts his hand on someone else's dirty plate, he grabs something off of it and starts throwing prasadam around, then even Brahma's bewildered. I came to see Narayan. I saw him just kill a demon, but what is this? This is the same Narayan? Is this actually Narayan, or is something funny going on here? So Brahma is already bewildered before the contest begins. He's lost already. Anyway, he makes his attempt to fool Krishna. But as with all the other demigods, who either out of envy or spite or just playfulness, they came to contend with Krishna. Krishna easily defeated all the demigods. Indra was, let's say, a sibling rivalry between him and Krishna. Indra was not seriously envious, but there's some rivalry between him and Krishna, between brothers. You may say, well, no, this is a serious matter. Indra tried to destroy the inhabitants of Vrindavan with his reins. I mean, that must be serious envy. For an ordinary person, yes. I don't know what the population of Mathura district was back then. Now it's over 1 million people. If someone attempted to kill all those 1 million people, especially the sacred citizens of Raja, that would be the greatest crime in history, to even attempt such a thing. You know, genocide in Rajadam. And Indra did that. But for Indra, it's not sinful. It's part of his job, sending storms and wiping out all communities. He does that all the time. It's just in the course of his day-to-day work. For him, it's not for the demigods to destroy all populations. It's just part of their duty. So it wasn't really a serious crime on Indra's part. And we learned that he actually wasn't seriously inimical to Krishna. There's actually some explanation that's not that Goswami tells us about. The information is from the Hari Vamsa. How Krishna is living in his expansion of Vamanadeva in the household of Lord Indra in Swargaloka, because he agreed to do that. He agreed to stay with Indra, and he does. He's always there. The demigods on heaven see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vamanadeva, living with Indra. And he is Upendra. He was born as the younger brother of Indra. So there's the relationship that Indra sees, that Vishnu is his younger brother. And therefore there's the conflicts that arise between an older brother and a younger brother. Especially if the younger brother is not completely submissive. Then there's some conflict in the Vedic system. The younger brother is expected to just be obedient to the older brother and not to become more, like to get the attention or to become prominent before his older brother. Just like a younger brother should not get married before the older brother. He's expected to remain subordinate, secondary. So when the Hari Vamsa narrates that when Krishna was let's not say nagged, but he was induced by his wife Satyabhama to get her a Parijata flower, and he agreed, I'll get a whole tree for you. Krishna went to heavenly planets to get the tree. He didn't start a fight immediately. He didn't try to steal it. He went to Indra and asked him straightforward, can I take a tree, please? Just one tree. But Indra, in a friendly way, he refused. He said, Krishna, don't you understand? There's rules. There are five kinds of trees, five species of tree that are found in Swargaloka. But according to the rules established by Lord Brahma, who created all these species of life, these five kinds of trees cannot be brought to the earth. They must stay only on the heavenly planets. So I'm not going to break the rules of Lord Brahma by giving you this tree. And anyway, Krishna, why are you so insistent on this? What's the big deal with tree? Can you get some other tree? I think maybe you're just too much controlled by your wives. No, not so good. You're supposed to be God. Maybe you shouldn't let your wives push you around so much. So I refuse. I'm sorry, Krishna. For your own good, I'm going to refuse to give you this tree. Then there was a fight. Then Krishna was forced to steal the tree, and there was a battle. And Indra was defeated by Krishna. Well, anyway, Krishna got the tree. So the mood, that's actually later, but anyway, that's the mood of relationship. It's a sibling rivalry. It's a friendly relationship or a brotherly relationship, but there's some competition there. And therefore, in that mood, Indra was envious of Krishna and tried to destroy Vrindavan. But the kind of envy you have between brothers, not between enemies. Krishna defeated Indra with no effort. All he had to exert was the strength of one finger, and he lifted Govardhan Hill for 7 days and defeated the pride of Indra. And he defeated every other demigod who came down and tried to compete with him. Some of the demigods didn't try to compete. Krishna went to Yamaloka to get back the son of his guru, to give back his dakshi, the dead son. And Yamaraj didn't fight with Krishna. He immediately gave the boy back.
submissively. Some of the demigods submitted immediately and were put in their place that way. Some of them quarreled with Krishna and were defeated. Here is Brahma. He's also going to be defeated by Krishna, but not by force, but in a battle of wits, in a battle of wizards to see who can exert the most magical power over the other. But like in every other encounter, there's no question of anybody being able to stand up to Krishna. Any demigod, any demon, any human being, anybody. Krishna easily shows his supremacy. But this is Krishna's glory. Did I say Indra? I meant Krishna. Krishna easily manifests his supremacy over all others. And this is part of his pastimes, that he puts everybody else in their place. After Indra was defeated, and he came to apologize and try to offer prayers, but he was embarrassed to even approach Krishna to offer prayers. So he brought the mother of the cows, Sudami, so that she could intercede on his behalf. Let her satisfy Krishna first, and then Krishna will be not so angry with him. And Brahma and the other demigods came, and they did the royal abhishek of Krishna. They coronated him as the real king of heaven at Govindakunda. And I think it was Indra who prayed, Sapatuna Indragavam. May he protect us. Krishna, who is the Indra of the cows, Indragavam. And this way Krishna was given the name Govinda. I just have to invert the syllables to get Govinda out of it. That will be a little bit later on. Anyway, Brahma's learning his lesson here. But there's no envy involved. He's just curious. He's bewildered. Is this really Narayana? Why is he behaving like this? This Mugdha Leela, Krishna pretending to be bewildered himself, like a child, walks around in a world of his own. Just like Gaura Mohan walked in, I'm still doing RT, and he comes in to ask if the computer's ready. He's in his own world. That's childish behavior. Mugdha. So Krishna is behaving like that. Brahma looks and sees that, and God is not supposed to be bewildered. So, can God be bewildered? Let me try to bewilder him. So it was not so much a conflict Brahma becoming envious. It was more like a scientific experiment. Here's God. He looks like he's bewildered. Like a little boy wandering around, in a different world from everybody else. Just playing with his friends. This whole universe to maintain. He's just playing with his friends, eating lunch. So, let me see. Can God actually be bewildered? Let me try to bewilder him and see what happens. That was the mood in which, mood of curiosity more than anything else, that Brahma was showing when he entered into this competition with Krishna. Friendly competition, but no question that Krishna is going to win, just like in every other case. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
Why did Brahma try to steal power with the cows and cowherd boys? I think another figure out of Krishna was God, he should have stolen Krishna instead.
Steal Krishna?
Yeah, and that
it
would become very clear
for
him right away.
That's how it is. Oh, I don't know. I mean, what he wants to do is try to bewilder Krishna. So he wants to play a trick that will fool Krishna. I guess capturing Krishna, that won't do it. Yeah. Krishna will see what he's doing. But he captures someone else in order to see if Krishna's going to be bewildered by it. That's... Yes.
I
Yes, yes. You can become Brahma in your next lifetime and see for yourself. Okay. I agree with you.
Brahmaji Mahala, he is the Acharya also.
Yes.
How did you come to realize that about Krishna Sattva? How you could not know that he is the Supreme Personality of God?
Because the Supreme Personality of God has the power to bewilder everybody. The pure devotees cannot be bewildered by Krishna's material maya. But Krishna himself can bewilder them. The yoga maya can bewilder everybody. Mahamaya cannot touch the pure devotees, but she does affect the understanding of the yoga maya affects the understanding of the pure devotees. So this was not Krishna's material maya bewildering Brahma, but Krishna's internal energy. So any living entity can be bewildered by the yoga maya. Even Krishna himself can be bewildered by it. For the pleasure of Krishna's pastimes. Yoga maya acts to increase the pleasure of Krishna and his devotees. Krishna is a boy, a little child. What's the use of being a little child if you don't behave like a little child? So behaving like a little child means mukdavat. A little child has to be bewildered. So yoga maya arranges for Krishna to be bewildered and experience what it's like to be a child. That's the yoga maya's arrangement. That's the childhood pastimes of Krishna, arranged by yoga maya. Yes? Well, the other demigods get their turns. Several demigods have encounters with Krishna. And each one of them is defeated in a different way. But there's no... Brahma is the most surrendered of all these demigods, or he's very surrendered. So he's not going to fight with Krishna. There's not going to be a battle. Brahma's not a fighter. You don't see Brahma on the battlefield. Yeah. He just has japa beads and a book and he's not a fighter. He's a sage. So the only fight or conflict there could be between him and Krishna is on the mental plane, a battle of wits. But he also, every one of the demigods come to Krishna and Krishna defeats them. Some of them just without a fight, just surrender, and some of them, enjoy having a fight with Krishna. It's like performing the Rajasiya sacrifice. You send out the challenging horse, and you have to conquer all the kingdoms where the horse goes. Some of the kingdoms will submit without a fight, and some you have a fight. But it's for the purpose of Dharma. It's to perform the sacrifice. So in order to establish the highest Dharma, it must be established that Krishna is supreme. No sage, no demigod can compete with him. That is proven by Krishna's pastimes. Not only Brahma, all the other demigods came. But also Brahma. This is his turn. It's a different variety. When Indra comes, it's one kind of fight. When Brahma comes, it's a different kind of fight. So it's not the same thing when just a regular demigod comes. When Brahma comes, that's something special. Okay? Yes?
I heard the other day, I don't know where it commented, that there was Indra's offense was less great than Brahma's offense.
Indra's offense was less great than Brahma's.
Brahma's offense was more great.
Why? First of all, you don't remember where, and do you remember why?
Well, I remember, I think it was one of the ones that
was mentioned. Someone else heard this? You heard this?
I heard it from Mother Bhuti. So he was explaining that although Indra was kind of, his offense was heavy in the sense that he was trying to destroy the Rajdhama.
Yes.
Although Brahma didn't, Brahma just stole.
Yes.
But it's considered that Brahma committed more offense that he was trying to separate the Krishna's associates from him. Whereas Indra there, he made all the associates stay together for 7 days, face to face. So I heard that I not refer to some scripture, but I heard it several times.
Okay, I don't know. I mean, Indra tried to kill them all. That's pretty. What he tried to do was pretty serious. He tried to kill them. That's separating them.
Yeah, but he turned out like this that he made even more efforts versus the other.
Yes, what he actually accomplished was favorable. Yeah.
But Rama said Rama somehow he was trying and he did this separation.
One can say no. He had a deeper relationship with them because he became a son.
Krishna. There's also a positive result.
Yeah, Brahma stole the cows, but Krishna became, he had more personal relationship with each one of them.
Not with all of them, because some of them were just cows.
The coward boys.
The cows.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the mothers of the calf, of the coward boys, the calf and the cows.
Yeah, but the main thing is that still for the whole year he was separated from his boyfriend, and so that was like a kind of serious.
I don't want to take a side on this because I don't know who said it, and I don't know who I'm disagreeing with. So I'm afraid to take sides.
Yeah. I have another question on this subject.
Okay.
You were mentioning some things about Vedic culture, like the younger brother doesn't marry or the,
yes,
the older brother missed. So how should this be formed and implemented, all these different aspects of this culture? Should we strive to implement it more?
Well, we can start with the four regular principles. we can start with a few things. First, become a little civilized. These are complicated questions. What is applicable to the modern age and what isn't? It depends on circumstances. It depends on what kind of society we're working with. And what kind of society is ISKCON anyway? What are we actually trying to be? Now, it would be nice if we were all part of Ahamsas, but what's the reality? What's the reality now? What's the reality going to be 100 years from now? I don't think anybody can guess. So how are we going to write a smriti for 100 years from now in ISKCON to decide which rules of the monosmriti are applicable? We don't even know what kind of society we're dealing with. It's hard enough to understand what ISKCON is now, let us be what's going to be 50 or 100 years from now. So anyway, in general, the principles of the Dharma Shastras are not etched in stone. Dharma Shastras are rewritten by various sages as each age changes. The new Dharma Shastras are written. So yes, the general principle is principles have to be adjusted according to time and place, according to circumstances. But you have to first of all understand what the circumstances are. That right now is too volatile. We can't even determine, what ISKCON is going to turn into. So I don't think we can decide yet which, what percentage or which of the ancient principles of Varnashram are applicable and which aren't, or which have to be modified. That remains to be seen. Some modifications have to be made. Prabhupada already made modifications. Example, this is not Dharma Shastra, but Bhakti Shastra. Rupa Goswami lists 64 offenses, or offenses in deity worship. One of them is to wear red or blue in front of the deities. The disciples question Prabhupada about this. Our devotees are wearing red and blue. The ladies are wearing red and blue. Prabhupada his response was, you know, he got annoyed and said, I'll make you all wear red and blue. The point being that that principle Prabhupada didn't consider it important to apply. It's there, Rupa Gupta and Nectar Devotion, but the Prabhupada, you know, was annoyed that we wanted to try to apply it. So their adjustments do have to be made, but it's going to be very difficult and going to take time to decide, to properly decide which adjustments happen, what principles stay, which principles get ignored, and which ones get modified. We can start with the basic principles of civilized behavior. You know, like children should respect their parents, parents should take care of their children, things like this. Almost any decent society has these principles. So at least we should recognize and try to put into practice these basic principles. Start with that.
Okay.
Ah, but I don't know. In this current course, you mentioned that Brahma's floor, the tasks including the caretakers also. So my question is that in previous course, caretakers you mentioned that they tied up the clouds with the bridge and they really came to take plants. So how these two verses are matched with each other?
Well, wasn't there, I mean, there was sort of a disruption of lunch when they found the cows were missing. Who? I think most of them were engaged. The whole bunch of them were participating in taking care of the calves, weren't they? All those boys. Yes? Okay, but he told them to sit down for lunch, but their business was, all of them were all, as a group, engaged in taking care of the calves. They were all palas. It's not that there were four or five palas, all the boys were palas. They're gopalas. Yes? Yeah, 1 second. Oh, 1 second. Yeah? No, but we didn't finish this question. Oh, yes, yes.
The path of Brahma is to all calves, and the next between they were seeking for blood, and Krishna went for searching calves, and there from Brahma came and showed the same thing.
Krishna, I'm sorry.
The path of Brahma is to all calves.
No. If I have it right, the narration says first Krishna went to look for the calves, and then Brahma started trying to trick him. While Krishna was away in the, looking for the calves, Brahma stole everybody. Yeah. Yes.
What he means is that he thought that there is some boys who take care of the cows while other boys are eating.
I don't know if that arrangement was made. So it looks like luckily they didn't put anybody in charge and the cows wandered off.
Because it mentioned that the cows left alone and the boys are eating altogether. So I don't think there are some boys who are taking care of cows, calves are
dead. I don't think so. There's no mention of that. But some boys were not eating lunch, they were standing on guard. I don't think they did that. I don't think normally, you know, when you take the cows out, okay, you know, people may be afraid to let the cows out by themselves, but it's not like you got to stand guard, you know, every minute. You know, you just be somewhere near the cows.
But it is not understood that Krishna went to find out the cows.
Yes.
And he told our boys that you took lunch here and don't become hesitant.
You just continue your lunch.
Yes.
Okay, so if they listened to Krishna, they just kept on eating lunch, if they listened to him.
Yeah, then it's going and coming, and here in this shloka it is mentioned that Krishna did not find the cows in the caretakers. But in that place he came back where our boys were taking lunch.
When he came back?
No.
I think that while he was coming back, that's when Brahma stole everybody. By the time he got back, they were gone, right?
Yeah.
previous verse was talking about the previous verse. He said that Krishna went to the forest, didn't find a cat, came back, because he thought maybe if I'm too long in the forest, then they will get worried.
Yes.
And he told him to go back and see the cat, the big boys.
He did not.
Yeah, that's the previous verse.
He says he didn't see them. That means when Krishna, I'm sorry, let me just say it this way and then you can correct me. Krishna came back and he didn't see the cowherd boys and the calves. That means they were already stolen. Before he got back, Brahma stole them. Okay?
The cat takers of Pala.
Yes.
The Prabhu is taking them to be just those who really guard, who take immediate guard. It's not like that.
No.
Pala is called Pala when he is, he was also Pala.
Yeah, they're all.
He's generally Pala.
Like it must be that each boy was given certain calves that they're responsible for. Normally that would be it. You know, they each had their own group of calves. So even if you're taking lunch, they're your calves, and if someone steals them, it's your fault. So all the boys were protectors, caretakers. Yes. But you
first, Dharma stayed in camp, and then later on, when it was always, and he stayed the boys, not just together.
Well, the cows and the boys are in different places, so Brahma bound up the one and then the other, yeah. Brahma can move around. Okay. Bhargava.
Yes, what did you think of? You actually mentioned that an extension of that usage of vidhi to mean recommendation. So, this is a slightly different question than vidha. So, what the role of the vidhi and the method of recommendation there and how the
right, but vidhi krita, that would be understood in a different context, not as being done by the Vedas, because the Vedas don't do anything. But vidhi can also mean fate, providence, fate. So you could say done by fate. Now that doesn't fit the pastime. Krishna's not thinking that. That, you know, an ordinary person might think that this has happened because of my karma. Krishna's not thinking that. But someone would read the verses. The words are spoken in such a way that someone could misunderstand it. That vidhi kritam could be understood, misunderstood to mean done by fate.
The question is that you said that vidhi, Vedas don't say, the way of saying the way, why that vidhi word is used. So my question is on that. So you said that vidhi word is used because there are recommendations given. You want this, you do this.
Well, that's why Brahma is called vidhi. Yeah.
So my question was, if that is vidhi, so Vedas don't say that if you don't do this, you will go to hell eternally. So
yes.
They don't speak in that language.
Yes.
But Vedas, they don't tell you what to do, but if you want to do something, then this is the way you do.
They recommend.
They recommend. So, when I was getting trained in other places, these atheistic people that were trying to impose, the main part that they used to fight with all the Vedic cultures is that they used to say, I don't like people telling me what to do. I want to be myself. I don't like people telling me what to do. I want something. I welcome advices on how to get what I want. So that is the way. So in trying to teach to them, I was thinking if I can tell them that the Vedas are not telling you what to do, but if you want to do something, then the recommendations are given. So that's the general attitude of the Veda.
Yes.
But even Bhagavatam, like it says, we do find statements in the Bhagavatam like Bhava, Shrava, Abhot, Vinyasa, Mahamud doesn't get excessive any chance to name of Hari, just like a dead man. So in Bhagavatam then we find such statements, which is pushing one towards devotional service.
Well then you know there are different moods of giving advice. Even in the category of advice, rather than just force, there's three different levels. And the distinction is made between the voice of the Vedas, the voice of the Puranas, and the voice of poetry. The Vedas speak like a father, sternly. And, you know, sternly advising, you better do this if you know what's good for you. Yeah. And the Puranas speak more in a friendly way, like between friends advice. And poetry, Kavya, speaks like a lover, you know, very sweetly. All giving advice, but in three different moods. Trivid Bhagavatam Puna, but the Bhagavatam speaks in all three voices. sometimes like a father, like the Vedas, sternly, sometimes friendly, like the Puranas, and sometimes in a very sweet way, like poetry. So you find all three voices in the Bhagavatam. Oh, it's quoted. But Jiva Goswami, I'm not sure it could come from. Vopadev, yes. I was thinking Bhartahari, but Vopadev, yes. Vopadev spoke that. Maybe in his book Tapala, his essay on the Bhagavatam. It's a very famous verse. Vopadev was Vopadev. He wrote some books about the Bhagavatam in the 13th or 14th century AD. Scholar, and he was a scholar on the Bhagavatam. But Jiva Goswami considers him an impersonalist. So although he quotes Vopadev once in a while, he doesn't accept him as an authority. In the 19th century, Max Müller was one of the discoverers, German discoverers of Vedic literature. He wrote a translation of the Rig Veda, Max Müller, into English, I think, or German. It must have been English. And then he also speculated about the Bhagavatam. He decided that Vopadev wrote the Bhagavatam. Because Vopadev wrote a book about the Bhagavatam, Max Müller made the brilliant deduction that actually Vopadev was the author of the Bhagavatam. And this was taken seriously for 50 or 80 years. It was ridiculous. Finally, the scholars figured out that this is ridiculous, but they actually took it serious for several generations. That Vopadev wrote the Bhagavatam. But no, he just wrote some books about the Bhagavatam and they're not even authoritative. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.